Hi, this is Outspoken Diva, and you are listening to the Dope Science Show with Stephanie, and she is the dopest.
Hello, welcome to the Dope Science Show with Stephanie Lowe, a.k.a. Science Steph with Steph. Thank you for your ears and minds. I hope that the show sparks new ideas, new opportunities, and conversations. I want us to learn and grow. We are all curious, innovative, and experimental in our daily lives. We are all dope scientists. Hey, you guys, welcome to the Dope Science Show. This is season 2 with Science Steph with Steph. I'm really excited to get back in touch with you guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all your support and encouragement in season 1. And thank you for joining me for season 2 to experience new things. this episode, we're going to touch on some very hard topics. I have a filmmaker on the show, Chris Everett, who was going to speak about his experience and his motivation for creating the documentary Wilmington on Fire. Wilmington on Fire is a real life event that happened in North Carolina, Wilmington, where a flourishing black community was destroyed by white supremacists. And this event, this U.S. event, really set the stage for Jim Crow laws that swept the southern states. It's a story of betrayal. It's a story of propaganda. It's a story of hate. And Chris's reflection on this, his efforts to document and report and tell the story of the victims and their survivors, is beautiful, powerful, and brave. And it also sets the stage for change. The more stories like this that are told, the more that we accept them and listen to them and learn from them, the better chance we have for more fair and better society. So I hope you guys enjoy the conversation, and let's start the show. The Statement on Race, 1998, composed by a select committee of anthropologists and issued by the Executive Board of the American Anthropological Association. As a statement, they believe represents generally the contemporary thinking and scholarly positions of a majority of anthropologists. Anthropologists study people. In the United States, both scholars and the general public have been conditioned to viewing human races as natural and separate divisions within the human species based on visible physical differences. With the vast expansion of scientific knowledge in this century, however, it has become clear that human populations are not unambiguous, clearly marked biologically distinct groups. Evidence from the analysis of genetics, DNA, indicates that most physical variation, about 94%, lies within so-called racial groups. Conventional geographic racial groupings differ from one another only in about 6% of their genes. This means that there is greater variation within racial groups than between them. In neighboring populations, there is much overlapping of genes and their phenotypic expressions. Throughout history, whenever different groups have come into contact, they have interbred. The continued sharing of genetic materials has maintained all of humankind as a single species. With the vast expansion of scientific knowledge in this century, it has become clear that human populations are not unambiguous, clearly marked biologically distinct groups. Given what we know about the capacity of normal humans to achieve and function within any culture, we conclude that present-day inequalities between so-called racial groups are not consequences of their biological inheritance, but products of historical and contemporary social, economic, educational, and political circumstances. And that is the accepted American view the American Anthropological View on Race. And you will find variations of this acceptance of race throughout the world. But there is so much evidence that there are more differences within so-called racial groups. So, for example, you will see more DNA variation between a black community than in between a black and white. So there's more differences within the group than outside the group. And every quote-unquote race has interbred and mingled throughout time. And even if you were to focus on physical expression of race, someone's skin color, someone's hair type, even beyond what is physically visible, internally, there are still a lot of similarities between quote-unquote racial groups. So there are no distinct markings that would separate us as humans. I hope this makes sense. The reason why we have to talk about this and think about this and be critical is because critical thinking skills are what is going to get us to the next stage of civilization. Do we want to be oppressed idiots? Or do we want to have critical thinking skills that allow us to think outside of the box? For instance, Wilmington on Fire is a story of race being weaponized against a particular group of humans, in this case, African Americans, versus white Americans who are white supremacists. Wilmington was a mixed, rich port city. They had intermarriage. They had united politics. They had a political party called the Fusionists, which was both African American and white Americans who were united in their political goals. But because of the science of the time that emphasized and taught that race can be determined by physical differences, visible physical differences, and that those differences are the reason why one group was less than another, is how race was weaponized. And that is how we have the story, as we've seen around the world, of one group using race or difference to oppress another. This topic was very difficult for me to talk about because I get depressed very easy. And that is the case for a lot of people who are quote unquote aware of things in our society that they want to change or they find that are unfair. And though it may be hard, there is always hope. And I hope you guys get that from the show. Enjoy.
Welcome, welcome you guys to the Dope Science Show podcast. It's been a really long time. And I'm so happy that you found me again because I'm ready and I'm excited to talk to new people, share more stories, and really practice this critical thinking skills that I really, you know, I feel is super important for people, that we have critical thinking. And the guest I have today that I'm super excited to speak to, his name is Chris Everett. I met him last year during season one. He was promoting a new project that he was working on that I'll let him talk about further. And it took me all this time to get back to him, but I'm so excited. You're the first guest of season two of the Dope Science Show podcast. Thank you so much, Chris. Say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone. Thanks. Thank you for listening today. I'm excited to be on the Dope Science Show. You know, I'm a fan as well, so I've been listening to you for quite some time. So it's an honor and a pleasure for you to have me on. So thank you. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and for doing what you do. You're a filmmaker, and I am big into film. and especially when we have the opportunity to tell really important stories. I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce yourself and let everyone know who you are and what you do, and then we'll go further into it.
Okay. Well, my name is Chris Everett, or a lot of people call me Christopher, but Chris is fine. I'm from Laurinburg, North Carolina, born and raised. It's a little small country town, you know, over here on the East Coast of North Carolina. I have a degree in graphic arts and advertising from King's College in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I've been doing films for about 10 years now. Recently, I would say since November 2015, I've been doing countless and countless screenings of my award-winning documentary, Wilmington on Fire. And Wilmington on Fire is about the 1898 Wilmington Massacre in Wilmington, North Carolina. And it's considered the only coup d'etat to ever happen in America. And we've been all over the country. We've won awards at several film festivals, such as last year, I won Best First-Time Director at the Pan-African Film Festival in Los Angeles, California last year. So I won some pretty cool, you know, awards over the past couple of years. And we've got about over 100 screenings in this 2.5-year period. And the film is going well. So, and this is what I kind of do full time, is documentaries, and not just documentaries, but all genres of films. You know, I also produce and I executive produce other projects as well. But Wilmington on Fire, you know, it really keeps me busy. So the film is still going strong.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you for introducing yourself. I watched Wilmington on Fire when we first spoke about this. The topic hit me like so deeply because it's a story, it's a reality, it's our history in America of being African American, and it's a story of, you know, a prosperous Black community living in a multicultural setting that is destroyed by white supremacists with the help of the government. And I had never heard of this story. I've heard of Rosewood, you know, I've heard of Tulsa, Oklahoma, this same type of thing. But this was unique in that they used the government and they went through all the legalities of changing the laws and the courts and everything in order to massacre and run out, you know, Black business owners and ruin the community. And when I heard this subject, I thought, or not only did I think, I told you, I can't watch this right now.
When you did watch it, what did you think?
Yes.
How did it make you feel?
Exactly. So at first I didn't want to watch it because I didn't want to be depressed. I get depressed easy, especially for these kind of things, because I feel like there's no justice. And when there's no justice in a situation, it's just infuriating. So when I did finally watch it, I can say it was beautifully done. The research involved was very in-depth, you can tell. It was really interesting to hear from people who were maybe just a generation removed from the massacre or Wilmington. And so most of the speakers were descendants, you know, and they stayed in the community. And they can tell you, on that corner, this is where such and such lived, and across the street is where such and such lived. And then when he crossed the street, he killed him. You know, it was like neighbor upon neighbor. Like, it was such an intimate thing. The fact that people are still alive, there's still buildings named after the murderers. There's still, you know, people who took over land and homes, and you can see the direct, effect of that, where some, their land was taken away, so they're no longer in the community, or if they are, they have no wealth, versus, white families that openly, like, took land from Black people and ran them out of town, and they still hold the wealth today, you know, and it was just very, very, very well done and very heartfelt. And I thought I would feel very depressed. And I did feel, of course, some depression watching it, but I felt like this film needed to be made because we're not done, you know? History hasn't ended. It's history is made every day, right?
Yep.
So I felt like this was very, this type of research, this type of stories are so important because there's still, every day that we have is a day that justice can be made, you know, that reparations can be given. And I felt like this film was really a strong case for reparations for African Americans in the U.S. So that was pretty much what I took away from it.
Well, that's the message I wanted to get across, and I guess I accomplished that. You know, that really was what I was trying to do, really, is to educate the public about this event and also really show the case for reparations, not just for this event, but just for all of these type of events. You know, Wilmington, it wasn't the only one. We had Tulsa, Rosewood, you know, we had Jim Crow, segregation all over, and the terrorism, you know, that was put on African Americans, you know, slavery after slavery, and still going on to this day. You know, the film, hopefully it can be a tool, you know, to lead us down that path to really have an open and honest discussion about reparations, and hopefully one day we can accomplish that.
Definitely. And these kind of stories, the high caliber of research and being able to document your case is what's going to be needed, you know. And I know there's after watching it, I thought, well, what organizations, what's being done for reparations? Who's fighting for this, you know? And
no one's really doing anything, to my knowledge, you know, in regards to the you know, the Wilmington story. But you have some grassroots organizations that are doing some things, but, you know, how effective they are, you know, really don't know. So you have some people out there that are trying, but, you know, it takes time and it takes work and it takes support. So hopefully one day, you know, all that hard work will pay off. Hopefully.
Yeah. And I hopefully it will. And I appreciate you doing the work because, I mean, another aspect of the story is, like, how did you get this film made? How did you get the money? And how did you find, you know, these witnesses and these researchers or investigators who were able to find all these documents and help you tell the story? Can you tell the audience a little bit about your journey creating this film?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, making this film, I would say I started kind of doing research, I say about 2010, and I was living in Atlanta at the time. And back then, when I was living in Atlanta, you know, I was about 100 pounds lighter back then. I used to actually, how I kind of got my start in the film industry was being a model and an actor as well. So I used to do a lot of modeling and acting, and that's why I made the move to Atlanta. I think it was like 2006. And, you know, I was doing some commercials, little small independent films and stuff like that. Little print, you know, commercial work and so forth. And, you know, I wanted to actually create my own projects. So I kind of just stopped doing the acting and modeling stuff and just started, you know, coming up with some outlines, coming up with some treatments and story ideas to possibly make my own films. So I said, you know what, I want to do a documentary to start it off. And I was just browsing around on the internet, and it was a blog post about, you know, several different racial massacres that you heard of and that you might not have heard of. You know, they mentioned Tulsa, they mentioned the Red Summer, they mentioned Rosewood, and then Wilmington, North Carolina came up. And I'm from Laurinburg, North Carolina, and Wilmington's about an hour and a half from, you know, my hometown. So that really intrigued me. And I just started doing some research and found out that no one actually has ever made a documentary on it. And this story, I felt like it really needed to be told. And I said, you know what, I really don't have a lot of money. So what I'm going to do is just put my own money up, make some sacrifices, and go without a few things to get the ball rolling, and that's what happened. I think I started filming some little stuff in like November 2011. And the first thing that I shot was actually the ending part to the film, you know, when the guy's doing the poem at the end. That's actually the first thing I shot, the first everything I shot. I think that was like November 2011. That was the first thing that I actually shot for the film. And so it took me from November 2011. I think we finished the summer, you know, editing and everything, the summer of 2015. So it took me about close to 4 years of, you know, using my own money, doing crowdfunding, you know, Indiegogo, Kickstarter. And also, I got lucky. I got the finishing funds from an NBA player. His name's David West. He plays with the Golden State Warriors right now. But at the time, he was playing with the Indiana Pacers. And he had his business manager reach out to me because I didn't know that they were actually following the film for a couple of years. And they wanted to actually order it. You know, they thought the film was made and it was out. And I responded and said, nah, the film's not done yet. But, you know, I'll let you guys know when it's done. You know, I'm still trying to get some money together. But when it's done, I'll let you guys know. And they said, well, how much do you need to get this thing finished? And I said, I need, you know, I gave them the price. And they said, well, if that's all you need, maybe we can make something happen for you. You know, we'll help you out. And I thought it was just like playing a joke. I was like, man, these guys aren't interested in what I'm doing. You know, because I was a fan of David West. You know, I followed his career for a while. You know, so I was like, man, this NBA guy is not interested in what I'm doing.
Right.
So, you know, it took some time for, you know, for them to kind of make me believe it was actually him. You know, so.
You were in Minneapolis.
Exactly. So, so when he came to play the Charlotte Hornets, and Charlotte's about an hour and a half from Marburg as well. And he said, yo, we got some tickets, got a ticket for you. Come to the game, and you can talk to David after the game. And we can talk about, you know, helping you out with this film. So I said, all right, cool, this is for real. So we checked out the game, great seats. It was my first time actually going to a professional NBA game. So that was fun. And then also after the game, I finally got to meet David West. And it was crazy, man. You know, this guy, he loves history. He loves Black history and our culture. So he said, yo, I want to help you do this thing. I like what you're doing. You know, I'm going to write a check. And that's how I was able to finish the film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. It was time.
Yeah, and I tell people all the time that, you know, social media is a good thing if you use it the right way. Like I said, you never know who's watching. Because, you know, these guys are watching me for a couple of years. I didn't even know. You know, so you never know who's really out there watching, you know, because you'd be surprised that, you know, your blessing is going to come. You know, it's right around the corner. Just keep working hard and keep it forward, you know, because you never know who's out there watching. So that's why I always try to be careful with what I do on social media, you know, and all of that, because you never know who's watching. Somebody is out there probably looking at what you're doing and is about to help you, you know what I'm saying? So I try to tell filmmakers all the time, and a lot of filmmakers don't even deal with social media. And I said, hey, you're losing already. You know, social media is a great tool. That's how I was able to build a following and get and attract investors and people like that to support the film.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you have to have social media. I mean, I hate social media, to be honest. Like, I have a love-hate relationship with it. Like, I appreciate that I'm able to meet people like you. And and I would never have met you in my immediate, like, social network. And so social media is definitely a tool for that. But I hate it because I also feel, and I'm not sure yet why, but something about the interaction on social media, like the act of scrolling and things like that, maybe it depresses me and it makes me feel like mentally tired. So it's like I use it and I like, you know, some of the people I talk to, but some, it's like there's something about the interface or that just makes me not feel good, you know?
I understand. And, you know, and I kind of feel the same way. You know, I used to didn't really be a big social media person until I started doing Wilmington on Fire. And I pretty much use it just for that, you know, to interact with people that support me and also I've met incredible people. Like I met my mentor a few years ago when I first started doing Wilmington on Fire. His name is Pete Chapman, and he was also my executive producer for Wilmington on Fire. Pete has done phenomenal work over the years, and I was a fan of his before I reached out. He did a great film in like 2006 called Premium, and it stars it's one of Zoe Saldana's first roles, major roles in a movie. And he did a great documentary called 761st also, which is about the all-black tank battalion in World War II. Yeah, it's dope. And also now he directs a lot of TV shows. I think last week was his episode of Blackish that he directed. And a few weeks ago, before that, he directed an episode of Grownish, the spinoff to Blackish. So, you know, we stay in contact a lot. And we're also working on a project that we're doing some fundraising for right now as well. So, you know, be on the lookout for that too. But, you know, I reached out to him when I first started doing my films and, hey, you know, I'm a fan of your work. I'm looking for an executive producer to kind of guide me through this journey. This is like my first major film. Would you be interested? And I sent him some footage of what we shot so far, told him the game plan, took the budget, and he was down with it. You know, and he was down. You know, he hit me back like a week later. I was shocked. You know, so we've been, and he's been impressed of what I've done as well. You know, just living in a small place and be able to reach all these people and to keep the film going. Usually a film doesn't last this long. You know what I'm saying?
I know. That was like 4 years.
Exactly. So he's been impressed on how I've been able to keep the momentum and keep doing sellout, you know, screenings, and the interest of the film is still moving. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a brand new film. And the film's been out since like 2015, you know? So, you know, so he's been impressed with what I've been doing, and he's seen how much I've grown over years as a filmmaker. So, you know, meeting people like that, like 20 years ago, I would actually have to move to LA or New York to even make that interaction. You know what I'm saying? But with social media and the internet, I was able to do it right living in the small town of Laurinburg, North Carolina. So I tell filmmakers all the time and artists all the time, you know, just create the content. If you create hot content, people will find you.
Yep.
No matter where you stay.
Yep. And what is it they say? Build it and they will come.
Exactly.
I don't even know where that's from, but...
I think it's from... is it Field of Dreams?
Oh, is that what that's from?
So when you build the baseball park at home.
Yeah. Now, that makes sense. Build it and they will come. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're a living example of, yes, social media is a tool. Just use it. And even, I mean, I use it. I'm just saying, I'm just sensitive, you know? Like, I get depressed easily about things. I'm like, I'm hypersensitive. That's probably my issue. But that's really great that you're able to reach out and network and make something that seemed impossible be told. And especially, this is a story that needed to be told. And like you said, people are still watching it. It's still, it's timeless. You know, it's a timeless film, and it's a timeless story that everyone really needs to check out, Wilmington on Fire. One of the things that they mention beyond building a case for reparations due to, you know, documented systematic, you know, destruction of the black community in Wilmington, and it's a coup d'etat, right? Because, and the reason why it's a coup d'etat is because they were able to overthrow the government legally. It was illegal, but legal. You know, the way they did it is like they rigged it, and then they were able to do it. Very similar to what we're living through now. And I called Trump winning a coup d'etat, but I guess the rest of the world will catch up to that at one point. But one of the things they talked about that really got my attention and was really memorable is the use of propaganda in order to get the community in support of you know, the war they were about to wage on the community. And And it made me think of what we're seeing now. You know, we have the fake news. We have all these talking heads and media, you know, companies that are using content to push propaganda in regards to everything, you know, politics, as far as who should be in power, who shouldn't be in power, what to do with immigrants. Everything in our life is touched with propaganda. You can't escape propaganda. And when I say propaganda, I don't necessarily mean everyone thinks of propaganda as a negative. I don't know if propaganda itself is a negative thing, but it's the use of images and storytelling to get a message across. And it's like whoever gets to tell that story, they pretty much win. And so for you making this film, it's just one more, you know, there's one more resistance that's been added to the, you know, the conversation. So, again, I want to thank you for making the film because it's timeless and it's out there, and I will continue to share it with anyone that I can come across and share this information with. And, you know, it's just amazing. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I'm just saying before I forget, any of your listeners out there, you know, the DVDs are for sale, WilmingtonOnFire.com, WilmingtonOnFire.com. You can order the DVDs on there. You can order the digital download as well on there, too. You know, it takes support, you know, to do these type of films. So if you like this type of content, you know, if you like these type of films and you want to see me making more films, support WilmingtonOnFlyer.com.
Saying I'll be free regardless, trapped in the middle passage, never to shine, shackle my arms and legs, but never to mine, never to grind, kings and queens in my jeans, the red, white, and blue O's, the red, black, and green, they call them slaves, I call them heroes, emancipated, but somebody didn't get the memo, cause murder was the case, North Carolina was the state, and Wilmington, the killing of black men, women, and children, in the land of the free, and the home of the brave, white mob couldn't behave in the face of ex-slaves, so... Black American screams due to violence and history books remain silent. Southern Democrats wildin' cause they couldn't believe. Instead of dying on their knees, ex-slaves rose in a G. Survived being deprived of their rights and needs. Started businesses so witnesses could watch them succeed. But on November 10th, 1898, about 2,000 racists started burning black places. Committed a coup d'etat and raided the spot. Forced the mayor to resign, government turned blind. They declined to react, it's no myth or fact. Powers that be drag their feet when the victims is black. They say I'm pulling the race cars, so get them. Cause ain't a deck of cars in America that don't have race in them. The descendants of the slain need reparations and change to bring them higher. Remember Wilmington on fire.
Definitely. WilmingtonOnFire.com. And hey, all you random parents listening, I hear there are parents listening to the show. Hey, you could buy it for your school. You know, it's something that is appropriate for at least, I would say, middle school and up. and yes. Is very well done. It's not boring. The soundtrack is dope. So it definitely, and there's animation. Like, it's a very, very engaging film. So I highly recommend it for you, your family, your community. And I also wanted to talk about, I mean, actually, let everyone know again how they can find you. So they're going to check out Wilmington on Fire. Are you also working on anything else? I remember you mentioning you're working on a documentary about an athlete.
Yes, we have quite a few things going on.
The
street films. Well, you know, Wilmington on Fire is still doing its thing. You know, we're still selling out, you know, doing sold-out screenings all over the place. So WilmingtonOnFire.com to get all the information, DVDs, and support that. We're also, my company also bought the rights last year to an underground cult film. It's called As an Act of Protest. And in 2002, it was pretty big on the underground and independent film community. It was pretty much deemed like one of the best black films of that year that nobody will see in 2002. And so I was able to work with the writer and director and co-star of the film, you know, Dennis Leroy King Lee, and he was impressed of what I've done on an independent level and a grassroots level with Wilmington on Fire. And these are the type of movies and stories that I like to tell and put out there as much as I can. So we, you know, we made a deal that Speller Street Films will distribute and remaster and release the project. And we have a trailer for it right now as an act of protest on Facebook. And we have a couple of screenings of that coming up as well with a few underground cult film clubs and organizations who screen this type of cinema in their cities. But that's a project that's coming out on DVD and digital this summer. And also, I'm currently filming a martial arts documentary. He's one of the first major karate pioneers in America and one of the first black champions of karate in America. His name's Victor Moore. And he's 75 years old, still teaches karate and everything. And we've been filming for a couple of months now, and the footage is great. It's looking good and everything. And I really wanted to give him his flowers, you know, while he's still here. Because a lot of times, you know, we wait till someone dies. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Just say, you know, they were this and that. I say, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I want to give this man his respect, give him his praises, and let the world know who he is and all his accomplishments.
Wow. I will definitely look out for more details about that so I can help you spread the word, raise money, and do all the things that we got to do to get it out there. Awesome. What was your production company name again? I didn't catch you saying that.
Speller Street Films. And I named it that because that's the street I was born and raised on, Speller Street in Laurinburg, North Carolina.
Aw, that's sweet. That's really awesome.
Yeah, that's the place where, you know, I first came up with my vivid thoughts and vivid imaginations and stories. And so, you know, that's really where I kind of birthed the whole thing of filmmaking and telling these type of stories. And it really wasn't until I left Laurinburg, you know, that I really knew that I could actually be a filmmaker. You know, because growing up in a small country town, you know, if you're not playing football or basketball, you know, no one really cares what you're doing. So you never really had access to filmmaking and being creative. So it was a good thing that I did leave for Charlotte and Atlanta, you know, stay in bigger cities and see people actually doing what I've always wanted to do. So I always tell people all the time, you know, there's nothing wrong with being in a small place, but branch out a little bit more and experience some things first, you know, because you never know, you know, the wealth of knowledge you can gain just by just new experiences.
So true. That's why you got to live and be open-minded. Out of all the things you can have, I think, as a skill or characteristics about yourself would be to be open-minded and use your critical thinking skills. That's like my big thing. I'm all, think about it, question things, you know, question things. Why? That I think if people question things more, we wouldn't have so much hate and racism, you know?
Right.
Like, question your beliefs, you know? That's what I think about all the time. Like, why would, I mean, you know, question things. One of the points, I keep coming back to the film because it's beautiful and it's so insightful, Wilmington on Fire. One of the things that they spoke about was, okay, so on one level, they're like, what motivated this crowd to, you know, what motivated the white supremacist community, which was like everyone, to turn against the black community? And when you take apart the story, on the top, it was all about racism, you know, it was white against black. But in reality, the power players, the people who were moving the chess pieces, they were just robbing people. They saw a successful business person and they're like, how can I take away everything he has so that I can have an advantage? Oh, he's black. I can use that against him. And how will I use that against him? I'm going to tell, you know, the white people that black people are demons and they want to rape white women and just, you know, dehumanize them and make them into monsters. And once I get everyone riled up with trying to get rid of the monsters, then
you see the same thing today.
Exactly.
You see it more geared toward Hispanics and Middle Eastern people and people that practice Islam. You know, because he didn't have all that back then in 1898. All you had was white and black.
Right.
In certain areas. You know, so you didn't have, you know, Islam and all those different things they're doing now. You know, so the target was easier. We knew who they were talking about back then and who they were
on.
You know, now they're still arming African Americans, but they've also found new targets, you know, Hispanics and Middle Eastern people. So.
And the thing is, think critically. Okay, do you? It's like, it's not just a racism thing. Like, people use racism as a tool. Like, you know, racism is a tool to accomplish these things. You know, to dehumanize. And people think, well, why would racist people be targeting Muslims? And why would racist people be targeting immigrants? What would be the advantage of doing that? And on surface level, okay, I just hate them, right? You think, oh, it's just about hate. And then the next level you realize, oh, wow, there's a huge financial advantage in having detention centers that have to have so many beds filled with bodies as a quota, and it's basically a means of making money. So if you can criminalize people, you get to put them in these detention centers / concentration camps or prisons, whatever you want to call them, and there's money behind it. And so it's like, think critically. Like, it's not as simple as people, you know, think. And I think these kind of conversations that we're having and science, you know, and the reason why I want to bring science into the conversation is because of the whole critical thinking. And also a lot of what people use as the lie to motivate people to be racist, overtly racist and support racist, you know, oppression, is they'll use things like they're different than us. And if you're uninformed, you might believe whatever someone has told you, whatever, you know, creationism story that they've told you as to why your skin and your hair makes you a superior being to someone else. Like, people believe it because they really don't know anything, you know?
You're right. You're totally right.
And I wonder how, when you watch or hear stories about this beyond reparations, do you ever think, how can we end this? What is there? Is this something that we can rationalize and logically work our way out of, or do you think it's a spiritual thing? Like, how can we end, like, the, you know, racism, their sexism, like all the things that people use to separate and oppress others?
Honestly, I have no idea. You know, people ask me those type of questions all the time. I'm an artist. It's my responsibility to create the art and put it out there for us to challenge us to think and to challenge all of us to come up with ideas and ways to end a certain injustice. But I don't really see it end anytime soon, especially here in America, where it's in the DNA, of the country. You know, the country was built on oppression, and it's going to take a long time to do that. And we never really truly addressed, what slavery and what Jim Crow segregation did, especially to a group of people, African Americans. And until we do that, I don't really see anything, changing. But it's up to people like myself and others. And you have a platform. We need everyone to do something. Like you have your podcast platform. I have the platform of film. Everyone can do something. And I think that's what it's going to take as well. It's just not really one way to do this. I think everyone needs to contribute something, to the change and to the conversation. And hopefully one day we'll get there.
I think you're right. I definitely think it's the whole question of, I think about philosophy a lot. So I'm like, it's a whole question of evil. Like, will humans ever stop being evil? And I think, you're right. It's just, I think, honestly, I don't think it's something that will ever end. And it's not just the U.S. It's a worldwide, it's a humanity thing. But I do think every little bit matters. Like, I do think our actions matter. Like like you said, using your platform, just everyone doing what they can to make the world a better place. I think that is what matters. And I think that no matter what, those acts of trying to make the world a better place is an act of resistance against evil, right?
Exactly.
Yay! Down with evil! And then, what's awesome is we have imagination, right? So, with imagination, we can visualize and create another reality that we can maybe live up to, And one of the hottest films coming out on Friday is Black Panther. And in Black Panther.
Are you excited? I'm definitely excited. I'm just because I'm a comic book fan in general. So, I'm always excited.
I'm super excited. I'm super excited about it because I'm into Black futurism. And I feel like this is an example of where we can re-envision, our future in this fantastical space or whatnot. And even a film like that, just like a film like yours, telling these stories have real effects on people, and it changes the way people think. And I'm really excited to see the film because I've read the comic books too, the most recent ones. Yeah. And the emphasis on the tech, the technology, and the fact that they live in, Wakanda, and it's like Africa that's been untouched, from outside influences. It's just like it's the fantasy world African Americans think of, and probably even Africans as well, right? Because they haven't been colonized. So having a film out like that, I mean, that's massive resistance right there. Even though it's mainstream, even though it's funded by Disney, it still matters because propaganda matters,
You're right. And also, I'm also I have a couple of Afrofuturistic projects coming up down the way too, and I'll definitely keep you posted on it because science fiction and supernatural stuff, that's always that's actually my favorite genre. You know, a lot of people might think it's documentaries, but it's not. You know, science fiction is really my thing. That's really one of the main reasons why I wanted to be a filmmaker. You know, it's just my love for science fiction, and especially, you know, black sci-fi. You know, I've always wanted to do that or, you know, be a part of it somewhat. So it looks like I'll be having the opportunity to do some things, you know, in the near future. So we'll see.
Yeah. Hey, wouldn't it be cool if this starts, you know how we had black exploitation films?
Yes.
What if it was cool we had all these Afrofuturism films, like a whole genre? I mean, I think it's happening, right? Because Octavia Butler, Ava DuVernay bought the rights to Dawn, which is a Afrofuturist story about a black woman who's a vampire, and I haven't read I haven't read it, so I don't know much more than that. But I'm like, what if this happens? I'm like, what if we start getting like a genre of Afrofuturism?
Yeah, see,
that would be
thing.
So awesome.
Yeah, it would. It would be great. But a lot of times, you know, it never really trickles down. You know, we'll have these certain spurts of some great films, some great black films. But you never really see the support trickle down, you know, to, you know, your local artists who are doing some phenomenal works as well. You know, whether it's, you know, art, music, film, you know what I'm saying, poetry. So what I would like to see is more of us, you know, we're going to see Black Panther, which is cool. You know, I'm going to see it. But I would love for us to really start looking at like African-American, you know, artists, you know, who do great works, great comics, graphic novels. Let's support them more, you know, since we're, you know, starting to be cool with going to see comic book movies now. You know, let's try to support it all. Let's make sure that support trickles down because Disney's going to be all right, you know. They're going to make their best. Let's trickle that money down, you know, whether it's with films, you know, all the art forms, you know. And that's what you rarely see. It never really trickles down to, you know, to the independent artists who are doing, you know, great works or just as good. They just don't have that visibility.
I think there's more visibility than there was in the past. You know, there's definitely.
Yeah, there's more visibility because of social media, but still, you know, the support, you know, still really isn't there like it should be. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
all I'm
saying
is that we go see Black Panther, you know, try to support, you know, a local artist as well. You know, not no janky BS stuff. You know what I'm saying? Somebody that's legit. You know what I'm saying? You just don't support somebody just because, you know, they're black. You know,
right.
They, you know, make sure their stuff is thorough. Their stuff is thorough. Support them.
You know, I absolutely agree. And the way people are, it's marketing. Like, you're gonna, like, if you can market and you're really, like, if you're an independent artist, the number one thing you need beyond yourself is having a good marketing team or PR, because it's getting people's attention and getting them to take a chance at checking out what you're doing, you know, because that's what it takes, you know, and that's the difference between an indie person and like a big mega film is how much marketing was done. And, you know, and it doesn't have to cost a lot, but I guarantee you, as we already know, that doesn't make it simple, you know.
Yeah.
So if it's hard being an independent artist because you're not necessarily a business person. You're not necessarily a natural marketer. So I think that's what makes it hard, you know. But having the mindset that you are into indie things, you'll get that audience. And I'm definitely glad that I saw yours. It definitely lived up to, you know, my hopes. And even without, I mean, you have had good marketing, but even if beyond, it was a solid film, you know, and So congratulations on doing that. And you guys definitely check out Wilmington on Fire. And also, like we mentioned, Black Panther's coming out on Friday. I would love to hear your feedback on the film when you go see it. I'm assuming it you're going to see like this weekend or sometime next week.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out Friday, actually. Yeah,
okay. Exactly. So I'm like, maybe you can let me know, send me a message, and I'll play it at the end of the show as well of what you thought about the film. Because I'm going to do a call like, hey, everyone, call in and tell me what you thought. So.
Cool. Will do.
Awesome. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about that we didn't touch on? you said you're into science. Do you have a favorite science subject or anything like that?
I would say, you know, like I said, you know, science fiction, the type of, you know, that's my thing. I would say I've been getting into tech a lot more as well. The phone number, actually, that you've been hitting me on, that's actually this thing that I use. It's called the Super Phone. And
ooh.
Ryan Leslie, he created it. And he became like a tech, you know, person and created this thing called the Super Phone. And it's a way to actually, you know, stay engaged with your supporters, your fans, and all of that. And it's like what I'm going to do tonight, you know, for all your audience. I'm pretty much, for whoever's listening, I'm pretty much going to give everybody a free download of the Wilmington on Fire soundtrack. But they have to, they have to text my number, you know, from the super phone, the number that you have. And I'm about to let everybody know what that number is so they can download the soundtrack. But, you know, the soundtrack is pretty cool. And you know, we wanted to do that because, you know, I'm a fan of hip hop. I love hip hop. And, you know, I really wanted to do something that would catch younger people's attention as well. You know, because a lot of times, you know, we watch films and, you know, it's boring and all this and that. And, you know, I wanted to catch the younger folks' attention. And they're doing the same thing with the Black Panther movie, you know, with Kendrick Lamar, you know, doing the soundtrack, stuff like that. So, you know, I've always, you know, try to do things like that to make it more interesting. And that helps with marketing as well. And we give it out for free, you know. But if any of your listeners want to check out the soundtrack, all they have to do is text me at 910-378-4357, 910-378-4357. And what the Superphone does when you text me, it pretty much says, you know, I can create a response without even texting you. And it responds in real time. It's not like a bot. It actually responds in real time, like I'm actually texting you. So it'll hit you back in a couple of minutes and pretty much says, hey, you know, I'm not familiar. You know, who is this? Can you put your information in my phone? And it'll send you a link with your name, your email, you know, which city and state you're in, and all that. So after you do all that and put your information in my phone, I actually send you a link to download the soundtrack and also a link to buy the film if you're interested as well. So now I have all your information. So when I come to your city or town, I can send you a text saying, you know, hey, so-and-so, you know, I'm in the town. You know, I want to offer you a free ticket. You know what I'm saying? To come see me. You know, just bring another person, you know, you know, to a screen. And also calculates how much money people are spending with you and everything. So you know who really supports you. And you can kind of go above and beyond. Like I give free stuff out to people who really support me. You know, I hit them up on their birthday, send them a special shout out for their birthday and stuff like that. Whenever I'm in a certain city that person is in and I'm doing a screen, I'll send them a free ticket. Say, hey, come through. You know, let's chop it up. And people love it, you know, because you create that one-on-one experience, you know, with your supporters. And it's right there through your phone. So Ryan Leslie created this app. I got on it early before anyone really kind of knew about it in the mainstream. Mm-hmm. And I've been using it for a few years now, and I love it. So I'm kind of trying to do this tech thing a little bit. You know, it's really you know, caught my eye. Hopefully, if I can get my money right like I want, I would love to invest in like a tech startup or something one of these days. So,
well, I think that's fabulous, especially the super phone. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
I'm like thinking, yeah, like, oh, I could do this.
You've been texting me as well.
Yeah, I have been texting you on that number.
Yeah.
But yes, that's awesome. That's good tips for you guys. Anyone who's out there trying to make it happen and need to connect with your audience, or you have a business, check out the Superphone and use social media, be open, get a mentor, network, you know, and be sincere. I think you've really given some really good tips in this whole conversation about how, you know, you got where you are and what's getting you further. So I appreciate you sharing that.
No doubt, no doubt. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Cool, cool. I really appreciate you. And do you have social media handles you want to let everyone know where they can find you at?
Yes. Hit me up on Instagram, Speller Street Films, and hit me up on Facebook, Speller Street Films. Christopher Everett as well. I think I'm maxed out on my friends list, you know, on Facebook. So those pretty much are the two. Speller Street Films on Facebook, Wilmington on Fire on Facebook, Twitter at Speller Street, Twitter at Speller Street, and that's the company. That's what we do. And you can just find me on there. On Twitter at Speller Street. If you want to know anything about Wilmington on Fire, Wilmington on Fire on Facebook, Wilmington 1898 on Twitter, Wilmington on Fire on Instagram, and Speller Street on Instagram is Speller Street Films.
Dope. I will definitely put everything in the show notes. And I almost forgot, because it's been so long since I've done an episode. You are the intro for the next episode. Actually, I'm changing it. You're the intro to your own episode. So you go, you say your name, and like, I'm Chris Everett from Speller Street Films, and I might have said that wrong. I'm sorry. And I'm on the Dope Science Show, and then you can just say, and I'm, you know, kicking it or whatever you want to say.
All right, so you want me to go ahead and do it?
Yeah.
All right. My name is Christopher Everett from Speller Street Films, and I'm kicking it on the – hold on, let me – hold on 1 second.
You can do it again.
Well, what do you want me to say again?
Okay, you're going to say, I'm Chris Everett from Speller Street Films, and I'm on the Dope Science Show with Stephanie, or just on the Dope Science Show. And you can say, check out the film, or you can say, check out the show, whatever you want to – you know, invite people to do, or just say what's up.
All right. Yeah. My name is Christopher Everett, and I am on the Dope Science Show with Stephanie. What's up, everyone?
Yay! Sweet.
Cool.
And then I'll edit it into the front of the show.
All right.
Well, that's it. Well, I appreciate your time, Chris, and thank you, thank you, thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing all your future work. And now we can say we're friends, too.
You know, it's very depressing to look around and see poverty, oppression, and war, and corruption. And it's overwhelming, especially when you are on the receiving end of oppression, right? And so it's hard for me to hear stories like Wilmington on Fire because I sometimes feel helpless. But I want to hear these stories, and I want to encourage artists like Chris Everett to use their art as resistance, because art, expression, are one of the tools that we have that can actually push back oppression. Toni Morrison spoke about how she felt helpless and depressed after George W. Bush Jr., or I don't know what you call him, the last Bush president, won. She felt helpless. And when Toni felt helpless, she reached out to a friend and her friend, seeing the strength and power of using art as resistance, inspired her to write this. And I share this with you guys because I want you to have this tool to face oppression and the angst and feeling of helplessness that comes with it. This is precisely the time when artists go to work. There's no time for despair, no place for self-pity, no need for silence, no room for fear. We speak, we write, we do language. That is how civilizations heal. I know the world is bruised and bleeding, and though it is important not to ignore its pain, it's also critical to refuse to succumb to its malevolence. Like failure, chaos contains information that can lead to knowledge, even wisdom, like art. Toni Morrison, no place for self-pity, no room for fear. Thank you all for listening to the show. I'll catch you on the next episode. Peace.